grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're gonna gather, and we're gonna march, and we're gonna blow its fucking house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, we are stepping back from witchy cultural topics for a little bit and having a discussion about being a femme-presenting person online. The conversation specifically centers around gaming spaces such as World of Warcraft and other online games in which people's gender or gender expression at least seems to come to the forefront and cause all sorts of interesting discussions and harassment and all sorts of other things. So I will say, quick content warning, this does discuss the fact that harassment happens to people online. I don't know that any specific gory details or anything are given, but if that's just a topic that you can't deal with, or if you are too close to the World of Warcraft lawsuit, as I have heard from many people on social media who knew that I was doing this topic, say they wouldn't be able to listen to it because it's just hitting too close to home right now. Maybe skip this episode for now, but this episode, talking about being a femme-presenting person in an online space, discusses the recent Activision harassment lawsuit, but it also discusses just sort of broadly speaking being a femme-presenting person online in society, but in online in particular, and the different ways that that expression of gender online impacts the way that you're treated, the kinds of help that you're able to get, the kinds of roles that you can play if you want to lead, if you want to take a leadership position, if you want to make a podcast about your favorite game, you know, that kind of thing. I will say, just because of the way that the recording schedule ended up, this episode was actually recorded several weeks ago now. And since then, I think that it's important to mention that some updates have happened in that Activision Blizzard lawsuit. Now, for folks who don't know, Activision Blizzard is a gaming company. They make a lot of video games. They make a lot of other things, too. But they're behind things like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Candy Crush, actually. And recently, there was a pretty massive strike and lawsuit, and a lot of those details are going to be discussed in the meat of the show. But I did want to mention that since the recording of this episode, Activision Blizzard reached an $18 million settlement with the U.S. government over allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination against female employees at the company. Now, there is still quite a bit outstanding. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, still has other things outstanding regarding the supposed frat boy culture, the fact that women are being paid less than men and were assigned to lower level jobs, according to complaints to regulators in California. Female employees were also allegedly subjected to sexual harassment. There's a lot of other things outstanding regarding the way that this company is going to sort of reconstruct itself and win back the trust of not only its employees, but its players as well. But I did want to mention that there has been a pretty massive update in that lawsuit since this recording happened. Anyways, I think it's a pretty interesting discussion about sort of a niche topic that nobody really talks about, or at least nobody really talks about in our spaces. And I think it has a lot of crossover because you know, recently there has been sort of a lot of discussion about authority and the way that authority is conferred and who we tend to think of as having authority. Thorne Mooney, a recent guest of the show, friend of the show, writes great books, is considered by many to be an expert, in her field. But the thing is, Thorne had a really great online discussion a few weeks ago about the fact that when we talk about authority inside of pagan, occult, spiritual spaces, we tend to think of men, specifically white, cisgender men, and the women tend to get pushed aside. Whenever lists of great witchy authors are made, the women tend to get overlooked. And the thing is, it's the women who tend to keep, or femme-presenting people who tend to keep the structure going, whose books impact generations. They're right there alongside folks, a lot of the times outnumbering the men, but they're not talked about. They're not thought of. And the thing is, in so many instances, the more privileges that a person has, especially if you can sort of fit into that cookie cutter default box of white, cisgender, male, you're immediately more trusted. You are immediately seen as more likely to be an authority in whatever it is that you're talking about. And so I think there's a lot of overlap here. I know that we're going to be specifically talking about gaming, but I think it's an important discussion because I want you all to think deeply and critically about, who do you think of when you think of experts? Who do you think of when you think of people in charge of authority figures? Is it only men? If so, why is that? And maybe start doing some unpacking as to, maybe some of the why behind the what. Anyways, it's a great conversation. I'm really excited to present it to you. I'm not going to talk anymore. You have a good one. Bye.
Welcome, Kara and Demi, to Inciting a Riot. I'm so happy for you both to be here today. Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, hi. So today I am really excited because we are going to have sort of an open, free-form discussion about what it means to be a femme-presenting person in the online gaming community. If you out there in the podiosphere listening to this in your minivan or in the gym doing your squats or whatever aren't aware, there has been quite a bit of news this year, 2021, regarding femme presenting people both in games online, gaming spaces online, and in the culture of people that make the games, people that market the games, people that design the games, things like that. So I was looking around and I have been longtime online buddies with Kara, who has been in gaming spaces like seriously hardcore for quite a while. And I thought, hey, let's have a chat. Let's have a chat about all this that's going on. So Kara, welcome to Inciting a Riot.
Hi, Firelight.
Hi.
I've been listening to your shows forever, and this is really surreal. So hello, Inciting Riot listeners. Y'all are my people.
I'm so glad to have you here. And so for folks that don't know you, maybe just introduce a little bit about yourself. How'd you get started in gaming? What's your favorite game?
Oh my goodness. Okay. Favorite game's easy. That's World of Warcraft because it basically absorbed my life. I've been playing forever. I got into gaming when I was very young. My parents, they were fairly young for parents, so they were gamers in a sense while I was little. So my dad picked up a Sega Genesis and that was it. From there on out, it was all downhill or uphill, depending. But he also plopped his old computer in my room when I was about 4 years old before I could really even make words. So that's why I have a very distinctly weird way of typing, but I can also type very fast. Because it's been, the majority of my life has been in front of a screen at some point. Let's see, what else? Yeah. What else did you ask? It's a lot to think about. Like, who am I?
I got so comfortable asking people questions that when I started getting interviewed earlier this summer, in preparation for my book coming out, suddenly people are asking me about me, and I'm like, I don't know what my birthday
like
is.
What are crisis?
You asking me? How dare you, ma'am? No, thank you. Rude. Demi, Right. Hi. Welcome to Inciting a Riot. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been in gaming? What's your favorite kind of game?
Well, much like Kara, I am a World of Warcraft fan. I play some other games as well. I've recently dipped into Final Fantasy 14, and I've gone back to The Sims because I used to play, I think it must have been Sims 2, let's say something like 15, 20 years ago, God knows when. And I kind of, very similar story to Kara in that I had a father who brought a computer home. And although I didn't have one in my bedroom, and we never had a console at home when I was a kid, we did have an old PC, and I did get to play Frogger. And then we had like Flight Simulator, which was amazing. And then when I got, well, World of Warcraft was the one that really sucked me in, and I've played games consistently since I started playing World of Warcraft in 2009. So it's been a while now. But I always had some kind of console. So I had a PlayStation 1, and then I had an Xbox something, and then I've had a PlayStation Portable and various bits and pieces. And now I have a 9-year-old who, I apologize if any of you hear in the podcast screaming because he's sitting behind me chatting away. But he's got his PC. We've got a Switch that we share, and I game as well. So, and we're probably going to end up with quite a few things in this house very soon for gaming.
Well, thank you both for being here. I'm really excited to have this conversation. It's sort of an interesting community, certainly. From an outsider's perspective, it feels like a very insular community with its own language, its own jargon, its own history almost. But that's like a lot of niche communities, you know, in certain religious communities, the pagan community, and there's big names that you think of as incredibly famous and big people that nobody else has ever heard of. There's decades of drama that you took years for you to figure out all the ins and outs of that nobody else knows about. So I think it's interesting to have this conversation. I want to first start off by defining some terms. So I want to ask, I guess, a softball question here. What makes someone a gamer?
Playing video games.
Yep.
So do I count as a gamer if I play Pokemon Go?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah.
A mobile phone is one of the reasons that gaming has exploded and become this huge business that it now is because of mobile games.
They're tiny and computers you get to put in your pocket.
Yeah. I always remember my maths teacher saying, you'll never have a calculator in your pocket when you're older. And I'm now like, really?
Look, I have one in my pocket. I have one on my wrist. I have one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mobile games have really kind of, I mean, all the people that play Candy Crush and they're like, oh no, I'm not a gamer. I'm like, well, yeah, you are.
Yeah. You sit in front of your phone and you literally play a game that qualifies, but there is a lot of gatekeeping when it comes to gaming. And that makes people think, oh, all I play is Candy Crush. I'm not a gamer. Mm-hmm. And it makes you kind of put yourself down in a way, like that's not a part of your life, or it's a flippant thing that you just do, you know, on the side for fun, whatever. But if it provides joy and a little bit of, you know, happiness in your life, that's good enough. If it keeps you coming back to it, then you're a gamer.
I certainly want to talk about gatekeeping and gatekeeping the idea of being a gamer, because I feel like that's sort of the crux of a lot of the problems, at least as I understand them, is this deciding of what makes someone a gamer, what makes someone a real gamer. And, you know, I want to dig into that because there's the flip side of the aspirational of somebody that, you know, almost like me, that sort of admires the culture of gamers, has a lot of friends who are gamers, but it's just like, oh, I only play, you know, Genshin Impact, or I only play Pokemon Go or something like that. You know, I'm not a gamer. But like, you know, the rest of that sentence is, but I'd love to be if I had the time to be. But then there's the other side of it that's like the word gamer is a bad word. Like, oh, a gamer. You're a gamer. Like,
yes.
When you hear about gaming being a professional sport and the kinds of money that certain kinds of gamers make and things like that. So maybe talk to me a little bit about sort of the dual nature of the term and how it's gatekept in two different directions.
I just got real distracted at little ears coming in the corner of your screen. So do you have a kitty there, Firelight?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do.
What's that?
Yeah, it's just Bella.
Hi, kitty. So cute.
She wants to be part. I'm gatekeeping her out of being a podcaster.
So let me think. There's a good comparison you can make between the word gamer and, say, a football player or anyone who plays a professional sport. There are people who play games professionally, and it's because they're really, really good at it, right? But there's also people who play football because they're really, really good at it. But then there's people who really enjoy watching it, or they play it with their friends, but they might not be the best at it, but they have fun. And I think the word gamer has been applied to the professional people for a really long time in a way to gatekeep out all the quote unquote casual gamers and look down on them. And obviously there's way more people who play games casually than there are the top of the top, you know, people who are just super good at video games and can win money because they're so good at it. Like people sometimes get into gaming thinking, oh, I'm going to be really good at this. I'm going to do this professionally. I'm going to make all my money, make a living out of this. And they get let down real quick because it is such a limited portion of the population that can actually break into that.
Demi, do you have any thoughts on sort of the gatekeeping of the term gamer, and both how it's being gatekept in a positive way and a negative way?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, you could only be a gamer if you were not female presenting. You know, it was very much a, in quotation marks, boys' world. And it was, I think it wasn't, I mean, I'm ancient. So, you know, 20 years ago when I was at university, it was really cool if you were a girl gamer. It suddenly became like this really cool thing. And I started playing Tekken because there were hot boys playing Tekken, and suddenly I was this cool girl, and that got me in with them, you know. But I was never allowed to be called a gamer because I wasn't serious enough, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't good enough to be classed as a gamer. Well, I was still playing the game, you know. If they can run around and kick, like Kara said, if they can kick a football around, I know our footballs are different shapes this side of the pond, but, you know, if they're kicking footballs around in the park and they call themselves a football player, then why can I not be a gamer? So there's that side of it on the kind of the gender side, but also there is this thing of like the top 1% who are, and they, I mean, they are phenomenal. You know, when you, particularly for like Cara and my experience in World of Warcraft, there are people making serious amounts of money who are in the top 1% of players. And they are, you know, they shape the way our game is created and how we enjoy it as well, because there's a lot of, it cascades down. So the things that they decide and the way that they play cascades down to the rest of us. and it changes the way expectations are. And then there's a gatekeeping effect where if you don't follow what they say, you're not allowed to do X, Y, Z. So there's still elements of it in there in so many different ways. But then there's also the other side of that in those of us that are more, in quotation marks, casual, we don't really care about that. And we find other ways to enjoy these games and to create communities that aren't chasing that 1%, because we realize that to be that 1%, that's what they do 30 to 40 hours a week. It is their actual job. And for the rest of us that go out and do other things to earn our finances, we don't have the time to, well, we do have the time, but we probably wouldn't be able to sleep or eat or have a life outside of it if we worked full time and then played a game at that level full time. Gatekeeping is very real. It still exists. I think now people are aware of it. It's changing, but it's very slow. And it exists on the player side, in society, like when you're talking to other people about it, and in the companies, which is what we've seen in Blizzard. So it's a very real thing, unfortunately.
I certainly want to touch on that, but I think while we're still talking about sort of the idea of the gamer, the concept of being a gamer, I want to talk about the stereotype of a gamer for a second here, because I feel like it's still one of those areas of culture that just doesn't have a lot of good stereotypes about it. I mean, when you say, oh, they're a gamer, like, there's the bro with his friends that plays Madden, and there's that, but those guys don't tend to get called gamers. It's not like, oh, he's really into football games. When you call someone a gamer, immediately, like, the words basement come into the conversation, like, oh, it's just some very large, pimply-faced man in a basement somewhere. And it's just all of these really harshly intended stereotypes. And there's a lot of body shaming in it, and a lot of fat shaming, and a lot of, a lot of stereotypes that go, there's layers here to the word gamer. So what does it take for you two to sort of proudly identify with the word gamer? What does it feel like to tell people you're a gamer? Can we talk about sort of the layers of that word?
I don't think a lot of people understand it anymore. If I explain to my IRL, like offline friends, that I play computer games, a lot of the time it goes over their head. They don't really understand it. But the stereotype of it's the large dude in his mum's basement, isn't it? Eating pizza. It's the South Park.
I was just going to say that South Park episode.
Yeah. It's the South Park episode. And that's what everybody thinks of when they think of a gamer. And and it's in South Park because that's what people thought of before South Park did it anyway. Mm-hmm. So people still have that vision of that's what gamers look like. And there are wonderful people who look like that. And it doesn't take anything away from them because they, look like that. But then there are other people in gaming who don't look like that. There are some crazy, beautiful streaming people who stream these computer games, and you would not believe how crazy beautiful they are, And they're not that fitting that stereotype. There are also a lot, particularly in the streaming and gaming space now, there are a lot of gamers who have earned their way through their gaming to make it pay for their living. They might not be earning squillions, but they're certainly earning enough money not to do anything else. And they will do workout streams, and there's quite a few of them now that will do a workout stream in the morning and a gaming stream in the afternoon, and they're buff, they're good look, they are taking care of their bodies. And there's a lot of conversations around, when you're sitting at your desk for 8 hours because you're doing some mammoth task in your game with your team or whatever, to get up and stretch and do some squats or, you know, whatever it might be, so that your things like DVT aren't becoming an issue for you. So I think that stereotype of how we as gamers look and live, I think there's a lot around our lifestyle, is changing. And I think people are realizing that we're not, you know, all sitting in basements. There's nothing wrong if you sit in a basement. If I had a basement, I probably would sit in it because it would be bigger than this office that I'm in. Yeah,
it's big and the acoustics are pretty good usually.
Yeah. And when you've got banks of equipment and bright lights and stuff, it gets hot, man. You need somewhere cool to go and sit. Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that if we sacrifice 8 hours of our day to sit in front of a computer and look at spreadsheets, that's called a job. But if we sacrifice 8 hours of our day to do a game that gives us pleasure, and maybe even that we earn money from, but if it just gives us pleasure, that's a bad thing for some reason, because it wasn't outside, or because it, I don't know. I don't really understand that.
Yeah, I said it's looked down upon mm-hmm. to play a game. And when you think of the label of gamer, if you read a lot of books, and that's like your primary form of entertainment, is there a label for that? Are you a booker? Are you a reader? Right? But
that's intelligently acceptable, isn't it? You know, you're deemed to be increasing your knowledge by reading books.
Right. Like, and same with movies or watching TV.
Well, but it's interesting because Demi just brought up a point mm-hmm. where she kept using the word streamer. Oh, they stream in the morning and then they stream in the evening. And the thing is what I'm starting to hear from YouTube and from other sources is people are saying, come watch my stream. Like, we aren't saying, I'm not a gamer anymore. I'm a streamer. Is that, are people changing these terms, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, streamers specifically create content for other
Correct.
People to watch.
Right.
So they are, and they, the way I look at a streamer, they play a game. Mm-hmm. But they are actually an entertainer mm-hmm. because when you're talking to people on a stream, you're actually hosting a whole community, and you might do a podcast live on stream, and you're then having to manage your tech for your stream, your interview, your guests, your mics, your chat room, all of it, your audience, everything.
No,
you make a good point.
I need to be heavily edited. Thank you.
You're the host of your own party when you're streaming.
Yeah.
You have to do everything.
Yes, I like.
That's what it's like. It's like hosting your own party.
But you're the one that's sitting in front of your screen with your one controller playing your game, and everybody is behind you watching your stream and like backseat driving, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's slightly different to just being, if you say I'm a gamer, mm-hmm. and I keep using air quotes, I don't know why, but if you say I'm a gamer, I think a lot of people still tie that into being stuck in front of your console as well, like on your sofa mm-hmm. and eating Cheetos or Wotsits that we call them in the UK and whatnot, and not doing anything active. Whereas, so it's like another stream is like another layer. It's like any kind of content creation. You've got a load of stuff that people don't see behind the scenes that you do first. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like an added. Yeah, it's like an added level of fluff that you have to work through to enjoy the game, I suppose. But you can be a gamer without being a streamer.
And you can be a streamer without being a gamer.
I'm asking that because it feels like there's a nuance between the intention of the word. And what I mean by that is I almost feel like there are people that pick up a game so that they can become a streamer. Is that... I mean, like, I feel like there's a positive association with the idea of becoming a paid streamer. And seeing that as sort of a legitimate, smiled upon, possible profession, or at least an approved hobby, societally approved mm-hmm. hobby.
Whereas if I'm just a gamer and nobody's watching me do it, that's sad somehow.
Well, I have a very simple way to put that. It's about money. If you're making money from your hobby, it's acceptable.
Mm.
And if you're good enough at streaming, you can make money. Just if you have to be either in the right place at the right time, or you have to work really, really, really hard, very consistently to get an audience who is willing to give you their money.
Yep.
Yep.
Demi, you brought up the word that brought us all together today. So I do want to talk about the Blizzard lawsuit. I'm an outsider to the community. I'm an outsider to World of Warcraft. I'm certainly an outsider to Blizzard games, generally speaking, but neither of you are. You have been in both of these communities for a very long time. So in your own words, could you all tell us a little bit about Blizzard, the company, about the lawsuit as you understand it, and about your personal sort of reactions to the allegations and to the general environment itself?
Well, when it comes to Blizzard, they were always seen as the good guys in gaming. They propped themselves up to be not part of the bro culture. They have a statue outside of their headquarters that lists 8 different goals, I guess, of their company. Things like every voice matters. And so when this lawsuit came out, filed by the state of California, I think Fair Housing and Labor, it was a big letdown to everybody who plays video games, especially women and other marginalized people whose voices are normally not heard in typical gaming communities, who have been heard in the player base community. It was a very it's hard to talk about, because the lawsuit itself basically said there's a culture in the Blizzard offices that is unfair, harmful, and even to the point of someone dying by suicide because it was so bad. And to hear that or to read that is just, it's heartbreaking. Especially when you think, oh, everything's fine. It's almost like being, having one of your friends say, oh, I'm in an abusive relationship. And you had no idea, because they were hiding it so well to cover their partner who was abusing them. So for me, it's been a lot of emotional reaction, but also I have friends who work at Blizzard who, of course, I'm concerned about, but I also don't want them to lose their job over. So there's been this fine line as a Blizzard gamer, not so much the employees, but on the outside, where we have to make a decision. Does it feel bad enough when we log into the games? For personally, do we feel bad when we do this, to quit all Blizzard games, to say, I'm not having anything to do with that, I'm not giving them my money at all anymore? Or do we say, I want to stay and help make change in the community? Because I am one of those people that if I were in the company, I would have probably been affected by these awful things. That was a really rambly answer.
So the conversation that as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, you said that Blizzard had sort of put themselves forward as the kinder, gentler gaming company, so to speak. I mean, that they had a set of ethics that they wanted to abide by, and they wanted to create
a safe space for people that just wanted to enjoy games. But it came out earlier this year, and I think the word that I saw the most in articles was that it's this frat boy culture, the stereotypical frat boy culture. It's this very Cro-Magnon alpha male, cis-het white male culture, and it is excessively so. Does this surprise either of you? And by the vociferous nodding, I'm assuming it doesn't. But did the lawsuit come out of left field for either of you?
I think we held them to a higher standard. We believed what they said, that they felt that every voice mattered. You know, the values that they have on that orc statue outside their building. You know, we believed them when they said they stood by those values, and it felt like a huge betrayal. You know, we've been let down by them, and not just the people that were there and in charge in the last 3 years, but this lawsuit looks back over 10 years worth of allegations and history. You know, it's not something that's just been happening in the last 3 years, in the last 5 years. It goes back a long way, back to the people who founded the company, really. And, you know, a lot of them came out on Twitter with statements essentially trying to distance themselves from it and saying, oh, we didn't know any of this was happening. Had we known about it, we would have put a stop to it, blah, 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 blah. And employees that have worked with them have come forward and said, I told you this was happening and you didn't stop it. Mm-hmm. So I think we knew that this happened at some level in most corporate environments, in most companies. This sort, you know, there are some vestiges of this kind of behavior. But to have it at that level, the frat boy thing, like coming from a British perspective, we don't like have frats and sororities here, but we certainly have like clubs that are exclusively male, that where you can expect the very similar sort of behaviour. But the idea that there were a couple of things that stood out to me, and I read the lawsuit filing. These things like cube crawls, where they would get drunk in the office and then go across, you know, crawl through the cubes and rate the women or ask them out. And one guy said to some girl he didn't like her because she wouldn't give him a blowjob. You know, and you just think, how were they able to get away with it for so long? And you know, I've had instances at work where I've had people say abhorrent things to me, and I've had instances outside of work where men have done obnoxious things. But if somebody had said something like that to me at work, yeah, damn right I would have reported it, and I would have expected action to be taken. So you wonder why how it got to that level.
Where's the breakdown?
Yeah, how was it able to continue for so long? And it was just, I think, a lot of us, and certainly from my side and my co-host on our podcast, we said we can't do our podcast like this. We can't talk about this company and this game that we love so much and be positive about it when this is what it's been built on.
When so many people are hurting.
Yeah. I think now we've heard so much more from the employees themselves, and they've come forward and they, you know, they are fighting tooth and nail to get this, to get their culture changed, to get things happening, you know, and one of the ways to support them is to keep doing what we've been doing, which is to play the games and to, you know, create the content and all the rest of it. And those are very personal decisions. Like Cara said, you know, some people can't physically log into the game. It's too painful for them. And that is absolutely fine. Other people have to play the game to pay their bills. If they're a World of Warcraft or an Overwatch or a Hearthstone or whatever other game, Call of Duty, if they make their money streaming that game or making content for that game on YouTube, they have to keep going or they're not going to pay their bills. You know, and that's also another side of it. So those people, alongside the employees that have had to deal with this, it's the content creators and the people that make that content that are tied in to a franchise that they now don't necessarily want to be tied into anymore because they're really upset and really angry and don't want to give this company any more money or any more advertising, because that's what it essentially is. Mm-hmm. But they haven't got anywhere else to go yet. You know, they're trying to find a way out that feels better for them, like a lot of the employees are. And I'm lucky enough that I'm not in that boat, but I know people who are in that boat. And I think for me personally, it comes back to that huge sense of betrayal. We held them to a higher standard and they let us down on every front, basically. Mm-hmm. Every single front.
As I've been sort of trying to enlighten myself on the issue and the culture and specifically the Blizzard lawsuit in general, specifically the Blizzard lawsuit, is how similar the entire thing seems to me to the J.K. Rowling Harry Potter issue. And how J.K. Rowling decided many, many, many years in to Harry Potter becoming a worldwide cultural phenomenon with billions of dollars in movie revenue and a theme park and an entire cottage industry based solely on her 7 books. She decided to reveal herself as a vociferous transphobe, and mild racist, and a whole lot of other things. And for quite a lot of people in the queer community, those books don't exist anymore. I know I still own my hardbacks that I bought when I was a kid. I was 11 when the first book came out. Harry Potter's 11 in the first book. I was 11. I grew up with those books. They meant a lot to me. But continuing to consume new media, new movies, buying a costume, buying a cute thing that I see online that you know, goes back to the Harry Potter business world, isn't a thing that I can rightly do. So, and for a lot of people, it's a very easy decision to just say, here and no further. Whatever you already owned before you found out she was this horrible transphobe is what you already owned. And, you know, you do with it what you want to do. If you want to burn the book, if you want to keep the book, if you want to give the book away, if it's too painful to keep or whatever, you do with it what you will. But it's interesting that, Demi, you bring up the point that there are people that make their living off of not just consuming Blizzard games, but streaming Blizzard games, doing character art for other people's yeah. Blizzard games. They do illustrations, they do art, they do online media, they make video shorts, they make comedy sketches, there are comic strips, there are all sorts of ways in which World of Warcraft has also created, and Blizzard games, generally speaking, have also sort of created their entire, a little cottage industry around them. And there are people's livelihoods that have gone back years, over a decade, based solely on this community's enjoyment of this set of games and this company. So for some people, it might be, okay, it's such an easy decision for me to say here and no further. I understand. I think that both of you continue to play these games. And I understand that the thought there is,
in order for things to get better, I need to continue to consume the game so that the company can make money, so that they have the funds necessary to make the changes they need to get a different culture. Is that a fair assessment there? Okay.
Yeah. There have been quite a few employees that have come out and just right out said, don't boycott these games. We put so much of our effort and our just passion into creating these things that we want you as the player to experience it. We don't want you to, you know, just throw your hands up and walk away just because of a few really crappy people. And that's the big difference between the Harry Potter thing and Blizzard, is that you can say J.K. Rowling is, you know, the top of it, but she's one person. So, you know, that the movies are all made by, you know, groups of people that aren't her. She's obviously getting the money from it, which is the part that sucks. But you're, when you see the movie, you're also supporting all of those people who helped create it. So in the gaming world, there's no one person at the top that you can blame. So when I log into World of Warcraft, I think, oh, this little patch of the area that I'm playing in, was it made by somebody who was harassing somebody else while they were at their day job? Or was it made by somebody who was working to change the culture and make it more inclusive and better for everyone?
How do you reconcile that answer, though, for yourself? Because there's no way for you to know the answer to that, is there?
Right. There really isn't. I just trust that the people that are organizing are telling the truth, and that they do want a better culture, and that their word to say, please don't boycott our games, is enough.
I think the other thing is with J.K. Rowling, and it's a tough one because I know Harry Potter means a lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And my kids never really got into it. I missed it by a few years, so I never really got into it. I own the movies, but I've never bought the books, so I don't own a lot of collateral in that. I think J.K. Rowling is an absolute a-hole. And, you know, if the movies are on, will I watch them? Probably not, you know.
Well, they're bad, but...
Yeah.
hot take.
I think the other thing here is we have people that are in that situation, as it is happening, saying to us, please keep playing. You know, if we had people that were employed on the films as they were being made, for example, and they came out and said, we're working really hard, we're proud of what we're working on, please go and watch the movie. You know, I think that might make it a bit different for that correlation, if that makes sense. I mean, reading through some of the employees' tweets on Twitter, you can feel their pain and the amount of work that they are putting in and how much they actually need our support, you know. And when they know that there are good people supporting them who believe in what they're doing is the right thing, it helps them to know that they can keep going on in the fight. And the other thing is, if all of us that believe in their fight and that don't want this frat boy, you know, harassment and everything, you know, all the other crap that's been going on, if those of us that disagree with that leave, what does that leave in our game community? You know, does that leave it open to all the misogynists and the racists and the transphobes and everything else? You know, are they just going to run riot, or can we stay and fight it and stand up and use our privilege to help those less privileged and just, you know, be in it? And it's, you know, it's not easy. I certainly don't feel the same way about the games as I did in June before it all happened. but I don't want to give those other people the satisfaction of saying, oh, well, we got rid of all the snowflakes. It's fine now. We can slash spit on everybody and call everybody nasty names. I don't want them to have that satisfaction. So, right, this game belongs to me and it belongs to Kara and it belongs to, you know, everybody that wants to be a part of it. So it's, you know, I think we have to be in it and fighting it, you know. Thank you. I think did Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson say something about, I'm sure they came out against J.K. Rowling.
Oh, yeah. Well. Most of the actors and actresses have said something and said, you know, I completely, you know, am against what Rowling has said. But it is so interesting because the moment that money gets tied into it, there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of really gross questions that you have to ask and a lot of really gross answers that sometimes you just have to swallow. I'm thinking, again, just to consider the Harry Potter world for a moment, Owl Crate earlier this summer is a delivery service that it's one of those box subscription services that got really famous because they mostly sent out Harry Potter themed merchandise, which is how they got their name, Owl Crate. And after all of the issues went down with Rowling, there was a bit of distance between Owl Crate and sending out specifically Harry Potter merchandise and books, et cetera, et cetera. But earlier this year, just in the last couple of months, they decided, oh, you know what? It would be a great idea is for us to post a long-winded message on our social media platforms about how we love Harry Potter, so we're just going to go back to doing Harry Potter stuff because we love it and we love the culture behind it and we're just going to keep doing it, but we're for an inclusive atmosphere, we're for inclusivity and diversity and we want everyone to feel welcome inside of the Harry Potter world. And I think I'd be okay with that if Rowling didn't get any more money from anything. Like, if it just didn't feel like every purchase of every single Harry Potter licensed product somewhat went into her pocket. And it's like, you know, I don't know. The problem is, as a queer person, we have a lot of these kinds of examples. I think of Chick-fil-A, which here in the United States is a fast food chain. It's one of the largest fast food chains in the country. It's beloved, obsessively beloved by a large section of the population. And the owners, the Cathy family, are vehement, vehement homophobes. I mean, militant homophobes. They have, their money has gone directly to lobby against marriage equality, and all sorts of other issues. Every penny that they get, they absolutely directly go back into fighting against the LGBTQ community. And yet, there are a number of people that work at the stores that say, but our store isn't like that. And we create an inclusive atmosphere. And I'm queer and I work for Chick-fil-A and I love my job and the people that I work with make me feel good. And I like the people that I work with. And so it's hard because I would love to, you know, sort of like what Demi was saying, like go and support that restaurant. I would love to go and say, you know, you guys are doing a good thing here. I want to give you money. And yet I know that if I do, at least some little penny of that is going to go into the pocket of somebody who not only doesn't have my best interests in mind, but actively wants to take away rights that I've been given and make sure that I have even less rights. So there's a lot of nuance there and it's a really narrow needle to thread. I'm curious about your own experiences in gaming. I mean, obviously you probably wouldn't stay in a community, I suppose would be the better.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I mean, you know, it's the thing about the Blizzard lawsuit is it sounds like every other big company in the world is that The women are slow to be promoted. They are quick to be terminated. That the upper echelons are almost exclusively cisgender, heterosexual, white males. And that doesn't seem to be changing even now, at least as far as I understand. So I don't quite know, you know, what the big, oh, we're going to change things when nobody's losing their job, or at least nobody in power is losing their job. So I'm curious about the actual, like, day-to-day community. What is it like being in the community? I mean, do you experience more good days than bad? What is it like to, you know, what is the actual experience of being a femme-presenting person in the gaming world like?
I would say, for me at least, it has changed as I've gotten older. As a teenager, it was much more, like Demi said much earlier, you applied the word girl to gamer. And that made you cool. It was almost being like one of the boys, except you were a girl. So there was still a lot of comments that I now would not tolerate because I have better boundaries. But also, I've realized what I want out of games, and that is entertainment and fun and somewhat a community, but it's not my entire identity. It's not, I'm not logging into a game to socialize with people to feel acceptance, because I found that within myself as an adult. So as a woman gamer nowadays, I've kind of built my own community where, just from friends and friends of friends, we just have a small little group of people who get together once a week, and we go into World of Warcraft and we do raids in the game, which require at least 10 people to play the content. And so we have a private Discord that we chat throughout the week just as friends. And that's something I've built because that's what I recognized that I wanted out of gaming. Over the course of my experiences. But that's not to say that that's common for everyone. That's just my experience.
Demi?
So my experience has, it's also changed. I would say in the early days of World of Warcraft, when and I talk about World of Warcraft because it's the game that I've played most consistently for the longest period of time, and it is a huge community. I mean, millions and millions of people play it. I would say that I had one particularly bad experience with somebody that I knew from the game, but the experience happened offline. And I stuck in that community for another 2 years with the idea that I would keep an eye on him and see if he tried anything with anybody else. And in the end, I just got to the point where I was like, why am I doing this? I'm not, you know, I'm actually ruining my own enjoyment of this game by trying to police somebody who has accepted absolutely no responsibility, you know, has not taken responsibility for their actions, has apologized, but actually not changed anything. So they haven't really made an apology. They've just said, you know, words. So I left that community and joined some friends. And we, very much like Kara, we've made our own community. We have a guild where I suppose there's probably only like 25 of us at the most. And we get together twice a week. And we chat on Discord, which is a private Discord. It's our guild Discord. Within that community, I feel very safe. I feel very happy to be all of who I am. And I feel that the other people that we have there, the people that we've brought in, feel that way as well. I have had negative experiences in the classic version of the game, where I've had jokes made about, gang rape, which was not particularly pleasant. And that was probably in the last, that was probably this year, that happened. So it does still happen. Things do still happen, and unless people are reported, and
are
I think
these
even
grown, are these grown men that are saying, mm-hmm. like grown adults,
well,
human beings,
well,
with
they,
jobs and social security numbers?
You would think so, but because you're a character on a screen, and they are also a character on the screen, they can't
That's
see
true.
You. But so it gives them this level of anonymity, which just emboldens them, you know. So, and we, you know, you use the tools that are available to you, and sometimes, like, if I'm feeling particularly strong-willed, I might try and challenge them, and other times I'll just block them, mm-hmm. because I haven't got the energy to educate these prats on, you know, why what they've said is so wrong. And then when you've had that happen, and then you turn around and the company that makes your game is basically doing very similar things to their employees, you think, well, you know, you've just given all these people a green light to carry on, and be so repugnant. And I think, you know, again, that's why I've chosen to continue to play the game. I'm not advertising it to anybody else at the moment, because I can't tell them that it's a safe place for them. So I'm not going to promote that, because I can't say this is a safe place for you to be, because clearly it isn't right now. But it's, yeah, it, I think what's happened is it's still happening, but we've got better at, partly at avoiding it, because we've built our own spaces where we go. And also, like Cara said, our boundaries are better. And I think that also, it comes with knowing who you are more, and really just not giving a shit about what people think all the time.
Yeah.
And just going, I don't care if you like me or not. You don't have to like me. I could tell you that you're a horrible person for saying what you just said, and I can walk away.
And having experienced all of those horrible things throughout the years to know better.
Yes.
So does this kind of thing happen in other games that have a social component where you could be talking to anyone, that don't have gendered avatars? I'm curious, because, like, obviously, like World of Warcraft, you're either playing a mask presenting character or a femme presenting character, and multitude of races. So obviously I'm assuming here, I'm reading between lines and context clues, and I'm assuming here that it's mask presenting characters treating femme presenting characters like garbage.
Yes.
But does this happen, like, if I'm playing Among Us or something, you know, where all of the avatars are the same, or a first person shooter like Halo or something like that, is that culture still there? Is it as easily identified? I mean, you know, is it as easily identified in an anonymous online setting to say, oh, I'm a femme gamer, you know, and does that happen in those spaces, or is it more just the gendered avatar spaces?
I think that there are a couple other factors that go into it. One is what you name yourself. If your name comes across as more feminine, you might get more harassment. And also if the game has some kind of voice chat and they hear that your voice is more feminine presenting, you're definitely going to get some words from some guy who decides, oh, it's a girl. So, but if you, even in World of Warcraft, if you're a woman and you make a male character, you're less likely to get harassed because of that. So a lot of people end up doing that because they just don't want to deal with it. They'd rather play a dude running around the game world than put up with people giving them harassment about their character's avatar.
Yeah, I have seen characters named in Among Us. I saw a character in Among Us named Single Girl, and the chat lines were all saying, "Can I take you out? When can we go on a date?" And I was just like, this has either got to be somebody having a joke, like the person who named their character Single Girl, or somebody who's really got some serious low self-esteem right now and probably needs a hug and a cup of tea more than they need a date.
I need a hug and a cup of tea.
Yeah. Yeah. But you just think, it does happen. And like first person shooters are, if you're in a lobby, in a voice lobby, so many femme presenting gamers will not speak because they know they're gonna, like, I saw a clip of somebody and she said hi and the first words out of the guy's mouth were, "Get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich." And it just, why do we even bother, you know?
Do you want mask presenting people, do you want guys to step in when stuff happens, or does that lead to white knight issues? I'm curious because, like, if someone sees something happening, do you want them to step in? Do you want, what do you want to happen when something is being said in an online space like that? Because I think there is a difference to you all that spend so much of your time in these kinds of spaces. Does it feel the same as if you were in a break room and, you know, Chad's being a Chad and saying something very Chad-like and, you know, there's a nice guy in the corner there and he's like, "No, Chad, bad Chad." Or,
right.
I mean, or is it different in an online space? I'm just
wondering. I think it depends on your goal. Are you trying to change that person who's being a complete dillhole, or are you just trying to stop them from being a jerk at you right now? Hmm. And if men see another man saying things that are entirely inappropriate and they recognize that and they just say, "Dude, that's not cool," that goes a long way. And if a guy who's saying awful things hears, "Dude, that's not cool," like 5 times a day, maybe it'll start to sink in when it wouldn't sink in if it was a woman saying it.
Hmm.
So yeah, anytime a man speaks up for me, if someone was saying something icky, I don't consider that a white knight thing at all. I think it's just human decency.
Yeah. And I think there's a line between us speaking up for ourselves and, you know, a guy then not listening to what we're saying and another guy coming in and saying, "Dude, you're not listening to her," you know, and saying what you're doing is not great. She's trying to explain it to you. You know, somebody backing you up is very, very different than somebody riding in and going, "Don't worry, I'll save you." That's a very, very different thing because that's, you know, that whole white knight thing of coming in and saving the day is as patronizing probably as the guy that you were just talking to anyway.
Because they both want something.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. You know, he's the white knight isn't coming in to help you. He's coming in to be the rescuer and to feel good about himself. You know, whereas if somebody just, you know, it's almost like they stand behind you with their arms folded, looking this guy in the eye, and you're just thinking, "Yeah, I know I've got someone in my corner, but I can handle this, and they're there in case you don't listen to me." That feels good, and we do need men to do that. Because we can only police so much ourselves. You know, there are so many conversations that guys have when we're not there that they need to pull each other up on, you know, whatever it, like, whether they're going, oh God, did you see that girl at the bar? You know, check out her behind or something. You'd be like, no, guys, come on. You know, they've got to police themselves as well. And that's society wide, not just in gaming. So,
and it's not just women, but also transgender women and non-binary people, yes, and anyone who's marginalized in any way is a victim of this kind of abusive behavior in video games. As soon as their identity is known, they're a target. And it's really unfortunate. But yeah, it's just like the real world in that sense. It's like a macrocosm of the real world, just in a little pixelized version.
Yeah. And they get the bonus of being anonymous, so they feel they can let rip.
Mm-hmm.
Industry-wide, all games, mobile games, open platform, open world games like World of Warcraft, you know, just first person, whatever, you know, industry-wide, what are changes that you would like to see made, both in-game and at the corporate level, that would give you quality of life improvements?
I do want to point out that the Blizzard lawsuit resulted in a walkout from a bunch of Blizzard employees, as well as over 3,000 current and former employees signing a document they laid out a list of four different things they wanted to see changed in their company. And so going by that is kind of telling. I can go ahead and read it. I have it pulled up here if you'd like.
Sure.
But first, they went into mandatory arbitration clauses in all employee contracts, current and future. Arbitration clauses protect abusers and limit the ability of victims to seek restitution. So that's part of the Blizzard culture, where when they signed up to be an employee, they said, if anything happens on the job, it has to be taken care of within the company. Like, you can't go outside the company and sue people, basically. So that would be very good, because then people who do get harassed or other in the workplace, they could actually get something to change that doesn't involve HR. the second one is the adoption of recruiting, interviewing, hiring, and promotion policies designed to improve representation among employees at all levels, agreed upon by employees in a company-wide diversity, equity, and inclusion organization. Current practices have led to women, in particular women of color and transgender women, non-binary people, and other marginalized groups that are vulnerable to gender discrimination, not being hired fairly for new roles when compared to men. So as a Blizzard gamer, I feel like, obviously, when I am browsing social media, I want to see people who just look beautiful and diverse and just like what the real world actually looks like, not, you know, a company of all cis white dudes. The third one is publication of data on relative compensation, including equity grants and profit sharing, promotion rates, and salary ranges for employees of all genders and ethnicities at the company. Current practices have led to aforementioned groups not being paid or promoted fairly. So that's just being able to say how much money you make and realizing that women and marginalized people are probably making a lot less than the white male that they work next to. And the fourth and final one is to empower a company-wide diversity, equity, and inclusion task force to hire a third party to audit ABK, which is Activision Blizzard King, ABK's reporting structure, HR department, and executive staff. It is imperative to identify how current systems have failed to prevent employee harassment and to propose new solutions to address these issues. And Blizzard came in and tried to do something with this fourth one. They hired a company called WilmerHale, which is a giant law corporation. But Blizzard has also worked with them in the past. So the folks behind this movement of a better ABK have said that this is not acceptable for this demand of theirs, because they're also known for union busting. Not a great thing, and not a good look. in this whole thing, to bring in Union Busters for this purpose. So going off of that, if I see those things coming out in headlines being changed, that's going to make me feel a ton better to log in and play my games and enjoy them, knowing that, you know, there might be some right in the world.
Do you but want so to see far, people? I mean, do you want to see people lose their jobs? Do you want, or do you trust the process of rehabilitation? I mean, what's the accountability factor here? Because I've been in plenty of companies where people signed pieces of paper saying, "We promise we're going to do so good," except for all the racism we're planning on doing.
Oh my gosh.
You know,
except for this thing next week that we've already planned that we're going to carry on doing anyway, now that we've signed this piece of paper.
I mean, we're just going to have one Gone with the Wind antebellum party next weekend. But other than that, we promise no more racism. Like, you know, we've all seen that happen. You know, we've all seen the gestures and the words and the we're going to sign a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. But what is it? What would a quality of life? I mean, you know, do you want to see, oh no, it's this and then this and then you lose your job. It's this and then you get banned. Or, you know, what does that piece look like? The actual actionable things beyond the promises.
Right. They've already taken action to change up the leadership, at least in Blizzard. The person who was there is no longer at that position. And they've promoted two people. One is a man and the other is a woman. So some people have said, oh, they're just doing that because it looks good. The optics are good to bring in a woman to have co-leaders instead of one person. They have let go of people who were mentioned in the lawsuit, as well as things that have come out since the lawsuit. So that's good to just say, to know that these people are, I guess, losing their jobs. They did a bad thing and they deserve not to be there anymore. So I don't really feel sorry for them in that sense. I think just listening to people who come forward and say, hey, this person's been very toxic, especially if they have more than one person coming forward, if they have, you know, a lot of people saying, hey, this person's been doing bad things, that HR actually take that into consideration and not just try to sweep it all under the rug and let this person stay there just because they have a big name or they contribute a certain thing to the games. Like, if you suck, you gotta go. That's how I feel. And that might be heartless, but I've seen over and over again that people, at least cis white men, who lose their jobs tend to not have a problem getting a new one. So.
And I think, I think a lot of that goes back. I'm so sorry. A lot of that goes back to some of our earlier conversation, I think, around the nuance of sort of ethical consumption under capitalism. Mm-hmm. Do I go to the Chick-fil-A? Do I get that Harry Potter thing? Do I support this independent person? You know, how much of that can I consume? And I think that, you know, I think that sort of the general through line here is I can consume it once I start feeling like there is actual accountability, and accountability needs to be more than I signed a piece of paper. It needs to be more than I attended a training. It needs to be more than I promise real good.
Yeah. Well, we had something similar last year when one of the, like, the very high up elite teams had a sexual harassment and worse, actually, allegations against them. And, you know, I've been watching them to see, well, where is their accountability? What have they done? What changes have they made? And I'm not 100% convinced that they're all the way there, but they seem like they've made genuine efforts to address the problems that were there and to change things. Now, they should have done it well before it got to where it was, but it does seem like they have made genuine changes. And I would expect the same from Activision Blizzard King. You know, this all started in end of July, I think it was. I think it was around the, for some reason, I've got the 24th of July in my head. And we're now at the start of September, and those four things that they've asked for, they haven't accomplished any of them yet, you know? So the employees have asked for these four things. They actually asked for a fifth as well, which was for Frances Townsend to step down from the Women in Blizzard committee thing that she was on, which she has done. How she could have possibly been tenable in that position after what she'd said on Twitter, I don't know, but or the email that got leaked, but...
it's like what?
What?
Yeah.
Sorry, what's the key?
So Frances Townsend was employed at Blizzard in March or April of this year, and she sent an email out saying that the lawsuit was, you know, it wasn't based on fact. Some of the allegations were old. It wasn't the Blizzard that she knew. She'd never encountered any of this kind of behavior. It's like, well, you've worked there for 4 months in a pandemic when you've worked probably from home, and you don't actually, when you do go to work, you don't work on the main campus anyway because you're in a different building in a totally different town. And she was basically just, it was a denial of anything and you know, and saying that this is all a piece of poo. Then on to double down on it on Twitter, she shared an article basically saying that whistleblowers were a bad thing. And yeah, she ended up closing her Twitter.
Happened to me, so it's never happened is...
It was exactly that, yeah.
This is so a... When she go ahead.
Sorry. and she blocked a load of people that worked at Blizzard as well. So, you know, they were all saying, what are you doing? You know, this is abysmal. And she was just blocking them. She wasn't replying. She was just blocking them. And it's like, this is crazy. These are the people you should be listening to right now. So she did step down from that, but she's still employed. Yeah. The guy that left, so J. Allen Brack left. He was named in the lawsuit. But the other guy that was also named in the lawsuit, Alex Afrasiabi, he left very quietly in June last year, around the same time that all the other stuff happened with this other group who'd had sexual harassment and much worse claims against them. He left very quietly around the same time. That was not a coincidence. Because Blizzard were already under investigation by then. They knew they were under investigation and they knew he had to go. Mm-hmm. So J. Allen Brack probably fired him. He was probably the one person that did actually fire him, but he didn't do enough soon enough. You know, and he'd only been in charge, was it 3 years? I think he'd been the head of Blizzard, something like that, maybe four. But it's all those, the old guard. I would like to see Blizzard... Activision, because Activision own Blizzard. I'd like to see Activision to put those four demands in place. And I would also like not just Blizzard and Activision to do this. I'd like Ubisoft to do something very, very similar, because they're still going through court for very similar allegations from 2018. So I would like them to put some stuff in place. And I would like... In our games, I would like more representation of things like, and this is going to sound really daft, but Blizzard humans in the World of Warcraft are pretty diverse now. They're pretty good, but it took them until last year. But I would like things like hearing aids, prosthetic limbs, wheelchairs, and things like that to be in our games, because we, particularly in World of Warcraft, our characters are veterans of at least one war, and yet they've come through virtually unscathed.
I did love the battle wheelchair that was added to Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things in gaming from the last year.
Yeah. Why can't we have those sorts of things? Yeah. There is a character in World of Warcraft who at one point did have a wheelchair and now doesn't. And there are plenty, you can make your, you can give your characters like facial scars and leave them blind in one eye, or I think possibly in both eyes as well. But there's nothing to show that they might have gone deaf or become hard of hearing, or that they've lost a limb, or, you know, there's just nothing like that. And I don't think that's a very realistic portrayal of the game. But it doesn't also doesn't represent what actually happens in, you know, for the people that play the game. There are plenty of people who play the game with controllers because they can't use a keyboard and stuff like that. And I have a friend who's hard of hearing who plays the game. You know, why can't we have, I mean, they put glasses in, they can put hearing aids in, you know, it wouldn't be that difficult. If they can put earrings in, they can put hearing aids in.
Right.
But just little things like that. And I know that's really silly when we're looking at all the other big stuff.
Representation is never silly, at least not here, not in this space. I don't think representation is ever silly. More representation. If we can buy that this game has dragons and magic and all sorts of things, you can buy that people can't hear and that they might want a way to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, we've got more... We've got more diverse stories now. You know, we have a gay couple as canon in the story, and we've had in the same story that happened, there was a lesbian wedding, and it was just a side shoot. It was like, this is perfectly normal. We don't even need to go into detail about it. It's just what happens, and it was fine. And just little things like that are brilliant, but it's taken them too long.
15 years.
Yeah.
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 There have been a couple other changes in the game since the lawsuit came out where they had a thing where they would name things after employees. So when it came out that a few of these employees were doing some not so great things, they've now gone in and renamed either NPCs or items. They're even considering renaming a whole zone that was named after somebody. And in Overwatch, one of their heroes was literally just a copy paste of a person's name. So they are talking about renaming an entire character in this video game that's super popular, has, you know, books and comics outside of the game that would have to also be changed, voice actors to come in and redo the voiceovers to say the different name, the new name. It's a lot of work that's going to be put into it, but seeing that the developers, like, these are not the heads of the companies, but these are the developers that have the ability to change things, seeing that they are doing what they can is heartening. It's like, oh, okay, you guys, you see what's happening and you see that change needs to be made. You can't do everything, but you can do some little things. And that's good. If everyone does, you know, the little things they can, it's better than nothing.
So I'd like to try to end on a lighter note, if at all possible. So I know that, you know, as technology continues to consume our lives and there's a screen attached to my hand, at least at all times, I have found myself doing things like trying to double tap photos or something like that. Just not. Have you ever caught yourself in real life trying to do a gaming thing?
Ooh.
I'm going to take it on a different level. I actually work gaming into my magic, my paganism, my witchcraft. There are certain spells in the games that, you know, obviously when you do magic in real life, you don't have electric sparkles coming out your face. I mean, you might firelight, you might, but
I don't know. You haven't read my book yet, so maybe I
soon. But, there are certain spells that, the healer classes get where it gives you a bubble. Where it puts a little bubble around you and it's like a certain color and it's sparkly, and the way that the game the game mechanics work is it protects you from monsters trying to hit you so that you don't take damage. So I use that as my shielding. So because it is so close to me, because I log in and I see it every freaking day, that I can almost channel that in myself to visualize that rather than something I've read in a pagan book to say, oh, this is how you do a circle. So it's just kind of overlaying that aspect of myself onto another aspect of myself. And it gives me a lot of fulfillment to do that, even though it might be, you know, on the level of having a Thor Funko Pop on your altar. I don't care because it's for me. And it works for me.
Demi?
I love that. So I do also do a little bubble sometimes. And I envisage it as a paladin bubble, which will make people that know me absolutely howl with hysterics because I can't play paladins for the life of me. I can't stand them. But if I feel like I'm going into a situation where it's, I feel like there's going to be some animosity or it's going to be confrontational or whatever it might be, I'm like, yeah, I'll have a little bubble of light now, please. And I just sort of hold that around myself. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever tried to do anything.
There are times where I wish I could take a screenshot of real life.
Yes.
It's like a picture, but way better because a camera can only get so much, but a screenshot gets your entire screen.
Yeah. That would be cool. The one thing I would take if I could, and this is going to sound really bad, I'd take death grip so that I could just grab anything. From like 30 yards away. I'll have that, please. That would be great. But yeah, I don't think I've done anything by mistake.
Would you rather have a mount or a teleporter?
Oh, teleporter for me.
Teleporter,
I play a mage that's one of their specialties is porting around and porting everybody else around. There are so many times I've been out and about running errands where I'm just exhausted and I'm like, I still have to drive home. I just want to port.
Yeah. If I could teleport, because my son's half Dutch. So if we could teleport between the UK and Holland and he could go and visit his Dutch family for tea, that would be so sweet. Aww. Yeah. That would really, really do it for us. So yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, well, I'd take a teleport over a mount.
Thank you all so much for spending some time here with me today. I want to make sure that we've covered everything that you would want covered in this topic. Is there anything that you've ever been at, or is there anything you ever haven't heard someone say that you wish had been said in a conversation like this and that we haven't said yet today?
I think it has been said, but I would also say, speaking as a mother of a boy, mums, we need to raise our sons well. Mm. And that means to respect themselves as well as to respect everybody around them. Because the better we can raise them, the better the world's going to be, basically.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. Kara, I'll start with you. If folks want to get in touch with you online, is there anywhere that you'd be okay with them doing that?
Yeah, I am on Twitter all the freaking time. You can find me on there at Xandara. That is X-A-N-D-A-R-A.
Demi?
You can also find me on Twitter and on Twitch. I am at Demetanoth. Which I will spell because I know it's a terrible mouthful. It's Demeternoth. And that's on Twitter and Twitch.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. I'm so glad that we had this conversation. I'm so glad that we can talk about this. And I certainly hope that more conversations like this continue to happen and continue to provide that color and that nuance to a community that doesn't ever really get a lot of spotlight except when things go wrong. So I'm glad that this conversation could happen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely.
Well, riders, that's going to do it here for us today. Thank you so much for being here for inciting a femme while gaming riot. I couldn't be more happy that you all continue to join me for these sort of niche, deep thinking discussions. Thank you so much. Thank you also. We are almost a month out from the publication date of The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, my debut book. And it's still sitting with a little orange flag as a number one new release in multiple witchy book categories on the various charts. So thank you all so much for making that dream come true and for sort of getting what I was doing with that book. So thank you all so much. If you'd like, you can order my book, The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, wherever books are sold. If you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider liking and sharing the show on social media. It's a free thing that you can do, and it helps other people find the show. You can also rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Seriously, the algorithm these days pretty much only responds to comments or reviews. Even just leaving a quick word, if you're already on your phone, leave a quick comment saying, hey, 5 stars, love the show, or whatever. It massively boosts the show up in the algorithm. And I, you know, every time a new comment gets put up there, I see tons of new followers. So the algorithm likes to push things that are getting commented on. I don't know why that's the thing it is right now, but that's how it is. help keep the show free and producing on a regular basis by chipping in whatever you can. You can buy me a coffee, which is a one-time monetary donation of your choosing, or join my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and monthly chats with special guests. This month, I have Laura Davila coming back to talk about Day of the Dead. So that'll be really fun. You can sign up at patreon.com/incitingariot. The show notes and everything else Riot is found at incitingariot.com. You can email me about this show or any other at firelight, that's firelyte, at incitingariot.com. And I'm pretty much at incitingariot on all other forms of social media. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.